Alan Kring Productions, in association with Emergent Light Studio, presents the Illinois State Collegiate Compendium, Academic Lectures in Business and Economics. This is Business Finance, FIL 240 for autumn semester 2023.
Welcome to the unusual Zoom session of FIL 240, Section 2. I'll run this for about an hour. And this is the first of the two sessions. In this one, I'll go over the basics of the exam, and then I'm going to take questions from you. And by all means, this would be a good opportunity for you to cover some of the terms in that definitions list that I gave you and that's available in your files. Now, as far as other information material is concerned, you also have, of course, your spreadsheets, and I'll try to be very specific about what I expect out of you on that, and I'll give you a more heads up in just a little while for that. Bear with me here one moment while I try to get out of the way of that noise, excessive music, all that. But to wait here just a few minutes until I can get a go ahead to go someplace else. But again, I apologize for this rather unusual session. But that's how it goes right now. Okay, now. Okay, first of all, can you hear me okay with over that noise that's being made by that piano that's being piped all over this place? Just give me a heads up if you can still hear
yes.
me. Okay. Good, thank you. Okay. Now, first things first, the final exam, approximately 65 questions. Now, I say approximately because there will be some that will be multiple part. There will be a matching, which, of course, always constitutes six or eight for the final exam. And then there will be some others that will have multiple parts to them as well. So all counted together, around 65. Now, as far as what you have for the, for the resources for the exam, you obviously your computer and also your Excel worksheets. And I'll try to give you a manifest of which ones you should have open and ready to go that you don't want to find before, while you're doing the final. You should have them open when you start the exam. The exam is 2 hours, and you will have your computer. The exam is password protected and IP protected. So in other words, you would have to be in the building, either in the classroom or down in the computer lab or someplace like that, to be able to do the exam, the final exam. And also, you will have all available to you 2 4x6 inch note cards, front and back. You have one that was used on the midterm, and provided you didn't throw that one away, you've got that material already taken down to a note card, and then you have another note card for more information on it. Also, you can have that financial ratios, financial analysis formula sheet for your use as well, like you did on the midterm exam. What else am I thinking that you can have? Well, that's about it. But that should give you plenty of resources to work with for the final exam. Now, as far as the layout goes, it's just like the midterm exam. You'll have the general questions, true and false, multiple choice, and a couple of fill in the blanks. And then you will go to the parts that have the numerical questions in them. As far as numerical questions go, You should anticipate that I will revisit mathematical questions from the midterm exam. You will also have a few that went beyond the midterm exam. Bond calculations came after it, but you have a quiz where you did those. And so the questions will be very similar, just different numbers. I will also put a stock screen on it, on the exam, just like I did on the midterm exam. That was very high scoring, as are all the numericals. That's one place where points tend to accumulate very well for you. And so those will have more point value, just to ensure that you have the opportunity to get those and get good points. Back to the first part, definitions, terminology, concepts, very similar to what I did on the midterm exam, more of them. You have a list of 116 that were words and terms that were covered during the semester. Pretty much all of them, except for a few lightweight that I didn't hit well enough to quiz you on. Any of the others, 116, would certainly be fair game on the final exam. I'm hopeful that you will review that sheet, and if you have questions, either during this session or on Wednesday, you will feel free to ask me about those. What am I thinking? Multiple choice. I had some rather feisty feedback on the ones where check mark all the boxes that are appropriate. Some people didn't like those at all, so I won't do a lot of those on the final exam, maybe a couple, but that seemed to trip up more than a few people. Trying to think. As far as the numerical questions go, give me a second. This is not exactly, Zoom is not exactly adapted to phones. But let me give you what I would anticipate would be your quizzes for the midterm. Wait, give me a second here. Sorry, I'm finding the spreadsheets folder. There we go. Okay. Files that would be useful for you, in my judgment. Good grief. There's a phone picture that is very scary there. Let me see. Let me go back here. Okay. Bond calculations. Now, there are two of those in the spreadsheets file folder in Canvas. You can use either one. The bond calculations enhanced was just a souped up version of bond calculations. Either one should work. Now, going on down, you have one, loan payments. Guarantee you, I'll do one just like on the, not exactly, but it will be one like on the midterm exam. You're going to find the payments on a loan. I might also, this time, ask you to find me the effective rate, which I showed you how to do. We'll do another one, if you want, on Wednesday. Now, the NPV and IRR spreadsheet, no question about it. The problems will be worded very similar to the way they were on the midterm. And I think I also did those on a quiz as well. Present and future values. And those are just standard stuff. I'm not going to ask you about mutually exclusive projects on the final exam. I decided that was just a little too much. I got a sheet for it, but I don't think I will do that. Now, risk and return. The capital asset pricing model is almost easy enough that it's better to just do one like that by just a hand calculator. It's just the risk-free rate plus beta times the expected return to the market minus the risk-free rate. But it's there for you. Stock valuation. Remember those stock valuation questions, like with the horizon value. Now, there are a couple of weighted average cost of capital sheets that are available. I can't tell whether I published them or not. But WACC1.xlsx is the one that probably would be the best for you to use for the final exam. In my judgment, that's enough quantitative questions for the final exam. The rule I have is that you have 70, you have an hour and 20 minutes. You should be able to get it done in an hour or somewhat more or less an hour. And that gives you time to go back and check your numbers. Now, a little piece of advice on that. Hang on here. It's the weirdest picture. Someone's, I can't even tell who that is. But anyway, wait. Come on. I'm having a hard time keeping Zoom where I want it. No, I don't get it. Why am I having such a hard time with this? Well, one way or the other. What was I going to? Oh. On the final exam, Canvas has a nasty little glitch in it, which more than a few of you noticed, with putting decimal places in where you don't want them. Make sure you go back and look at your answers to make sure that they, what is in the answer box is what you want. Remember that when you put in a number in Canvas, you want to, no commas, no spaces, nothing like that. Yeah, just make sure that you're, what you put in there. When you write in a number, make sure you don't put in any commas or symbols, just the number. And if it's negative, a negative sign, decimal places where you mean them to be. And in general, just go back and check. That was a lot like work going through almost 400 exams, finding the answers that were right, but they had a decimal place where it shouldn't have been. And of course, Canvas has no mercy. So there's that. Anyway, now if you make sure you go back through the quizzes at midterm to make sure that I have the answer key, the answers are available to you as well as the questions. If you see one where I've forgotten to disclose, reveal the answers, let me know and just send me an email message and I'll fix it. Other things right off the bat, make sure that you get that Wall Street Prep. I'm going in there every couple of days and I pick up all of the scores that have shown up in my dashboard there and I move them over to Canvas, your Canvas gradebook. Now, here's how it works one more time, just to make sure you are clear on it. 80% and above, you're certified by Wall Street Prep. That means you get 100% for that part of the course from me, that 5%. If you get below 80%, you're not certified, but you get your score is still recorded in that for that assignment section in your grade book. So if you got a 70 on the final exam, that Excel final exam, you wouldn't get certified, but you still get a 70 out of 100 in the grade book. So it's not a complete loss if you don't ace, if you don't get the 80% threshold. But if you do, you're certified, and you get 100 out of 100 points from me, regardless of whether it was 100 or 80 or somewhere in between. Okay, that's that. What am I forgetting? Your math on the final exam, again, that will be very similar to what you saw on the midterm, although this time I also have gone through bond calculations with you, and I was a little more in depth with free cash flow. That was different. Yeah, by all means, if you want to chat, oh, there's my chat. The chat is a little bit weird on a phone in Zoom. Sometimes I miss them for a second, but I'll catch it if you've got a question for me. But primarily for this session, I'm just going through these basics with you. On Wednesday, we'll meet. There will be a few preliminary words, and then you will do your course evaluations and then student course evaluations, and then we'll get down to the second and last round of the exam. Moving on here. In this session, especially the focus I want, you've gone through that list. You've seen the list. If you have questions that you would like me to give you from that list of terms, 116 terms, you can ask those right here, right now, and I'll clean those up for you. Also, this is a recorded podcast, and the recordings are being made to the cloud rather than to my local computer because they eat every bit of memory in my Samsung phone here. But what happens is it's processed by Zoom. That takes about 4 hours, and I get a notice it's ready. They give me a link and a password. So what I'll do is, as soon as this session is available, I'll put it up as an announcement sometime probably this evening, and I'll say, click on here and use this password to view the Zoom video. So you can relive the dream that was this odd session later tonight or sometime over the weekend to help you along. So this is worth it for you to have this, to ask me questions here and now, because they will be on a video for you to review. And of course, you also have my podcasts, which are available on my site, on Apple iTunes. They are now available on YouTube. And if you want a transcript so you can follow along the words, that is available at rss.com. And I gave you the link to that previously. If you can't find that link, just send me an email message and I'll give you the link again. But that's kind of a valuable thing because then you have the transcript of what was going on. And it's a pretty good, pretty accurate, doesn't make too many mistakes in transcribing. Okay, your turn. Do you have questions for me? It's all you now. You're on video. So let me know what you have to ask.
Question real quick.
Yeah.
Just to make sure, that Excel crash course is essentially our final, right?
No. That's the final for Excel. That's Wall Street Prep's exam at the end of the crash course to be able to certify you in Excel.
Okay. So we take another final in class then?
Well, that's just the Excel. Yeah, you're taking the real actual final exam of FIL 240 in class on Tuesday. I can't remember the time of it. But yeah, that's the final exam. That when they call that a final, that's just their certification test to say you are now certified to be able to say that you know Excel.
Okay. All right. Sounds good. Thank you.
Yeah.
Are you still doing office hours this week?
Oh, yeah. I'm there tomorrow. I just couldn't be there today because I am in a hospital. But
okay.
If it's any comfort to you, I didn't die, but if it's any comfort to you, it hurt like hell.
You are in my prayers.
No, don't worry about that. I mean, if you, every time I bring the Lord down, he starts asking uncomfortable questions, and so I tend to wait. I'm going to wait for the final exam on that one, which I've tried to put off a few years by being here. But thank you anyway. But yeah, but yeah, I mean, my office hours are the rest of the. I'm there on Tuesdays and Thursdays officially from 11 to 12:30. But unofficially, I'm in my office on Wednesdays and Fridays too, from about 10:30 until noon or something like that. So just swing by, and if you have something to ask me about, I'm in there, or obviously you can email me. If it's something that's really major, I once in a while will entertain a Zoom session if it's for a couple of people. Yeah, I'm available. I'm here for you in
Perfect.
spirit,
Thank
in video, if not in person. Ask me questions.
Are we doing our attendance quiz today?
No, that's,
no,
on,
that's
Wednesday.
On Wednesday.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, on Wednesday. Sorry about that.
No worries. I was wondering.
That feedback is really weird. Okay, here's what's going on. The first thing we'll do in class on Wednesday is the attendance quiz. I'll give, about 5-10 minutes after the hour, and then that'll take you all of about 2 to 2 minutes, and then I'll give out the student evals. And of course, I have to leave the room while you're doing those. I'll do that for about 10 minutes, give you about 10, 15 minutes. And then when I come back in, we're just going to hit the ground and do another review session. That review session, I will probably focus more on those spreadsheets because I can put them up on the overhead and all of that. But you can also obviously ask me more questions about definitions or concepts or something like that too. So, yeah.
Cool. Thank you.
Okay. Ask me questions.
Could you kind of go through some of the lingo that you talk about that's not in the textbook, like bid ask, going long, all that stuff?
Give me specifics.
I get a little bit confused with bid ask.
Bid ask.
Yeah.
Okay, the bid and the ask. When I buy a share of stock, the price I will pay for it is the ask. If I am selling stock, the price I will get for my sale is the bid. So, for example, if I have a stock where the bid is, let's say, $98 and the ask is $99. Let's say I buy a round lot. That means 100 shares. So if I were to sell that stock, I would get the bid, $98 times 100, or $9,800. However, if I want to buy that stock, one round lot, 100 shares, I would pay the ask, $99. So I would pay $9,900. The bid is always going to be lower than the ask. Sometimes it's a lot lower. Sometimes it's a little lower, but the difference is that in order for the broker to want to play, if you want to sell that broker something, he's going to want you to sell it to him at a cheap, on the cheap. And then when he sells it again, he wants to sell it to someone else at a higher price. So on your end, you're going to sell at a low price and you're going to buy at the high price. You got that?
Yeah, thanks.
Yeah. Oh, by the way, I'm glad you brought that up. I will have one of those stock screens, just like on the midterm. I'll have one of those on the final. Same question, same basic questions, too. What else we got? don't know why this Zoom keeps going to car mode. Are you sure you want to talk while you're driving? Well, no, I'm not driving. Okay, what else do we got?
Has the bandwidth for crude oil changed, or is it
same I'm not going to ask about it. Thank you for see. If you ask me something and I say I'm not going to ask on the final, I'll tell you. I'm not going to ask about it this time. Oil is too darn volatile right now, and it's going to get worse because there's talk that I mentioned before, the war premium. It looks like there's an interest in putting more of a war premium on stock right now because there's more possibility of disruptions of oil supplies coming out of the Middle East with the idiot Houthis blowing things up and Iran behind it. We could get into a more serious conflict, and that would cause disruptions in oil supplies. Especially, there are a couple of straits that are controlled by the bad guys through which the oil a lot of oil tankers go. And so that's a little bit tricky right now. So the oil prices may be going up. So I pretty much don't dare ask anything because it might be changed. The oil price might be different by the day of the final. Okay, what else you got there? Give me a minute here. Okay, what else?
Will there be questions regarding like certain financial statements, like income statement, balance sheet?
Not exactly. I was kind of on the fence about that. My concern with asking those questions is that this is not an accounting course. Obviously, we have to use accounting information, but I'm a little bit dodgy about going too much into it. Now, I might very well ask you something like, what's the difference between accounting profit and economic profit? More specifically, what's the difference between accounting costs and financial costs that a finance person would be interested in? Those kinds of questions that are not looking at the technical numbers of the accounting statements, that's for the accounting classes to do, but more about what is the behind these numbers and where are the concerns we have that are not shared by accountants, that kind of thing, especially about costs and such things as that. Okay. What else have we got?
There are a couple things in the chat. Someone put, how do you input the data for the free cash flow analysis when there's 100% bonus depreciation?
I forget to look at the chat because it doesn't come up automatically on this phone. Apologies for that. Okay. The 100% depreciation, that's just how the book did it. And I mean, I could make it a lot harder, but all you're just saying is that, look, whatever salvage value you get, you depreciated away all the depreciation the first year. So in other words, if I spend, do a capital expenditure of $100,000, well, normally you would take $10,000 away every year. With bonus depreciation, it's easy. All you do is just take away all of the expense the first year so that at the end, the salvage value, let's say you end up with a salvage value of $75,000. Well, since there's no book value, you're going to be taxed on all $75,000 because it was 100% depreciated that first year. So there is no salvage minus book. Is just salvage value, and that's all exposed to tax at the end. So that 100% bonus depreciation, it should, in that sheet that I gave you, it should automatically say, well, what was the purchase price? Okay, That's how much we depreciate the first year, 100%. So that means that there's no book value at the end because all the book value was depreciated at the very beginning. So the entire salvage value is going to end up being taxed at the company's tax rate at the end. So in other words, $100,000, okay. All of it was depreciated away the first year. So now when you, let's say at the end, you sell that stuff for $75,000. Okay, you take salvage minus book to get and calculate that's how much you are taxed on. But if there's no book, then you're just taxed on the entire salvage value, $75,000 times 21% or 25%, whatever you're supposed to use. So in other words, your after-tax salvage value is, with 100% bonus depreciation, going to be $75,000 minus zero or $75,000 minus 21% of $75,000. It's better to do this on the whiteboard than it is on a Zoom session, but basically it just means that when you figure out what tax you pay on the salvage value, the tax is going to be 21% of how much you sell it for. So the after-tax salvage value is a salvage value minus the tax on the salvage value. Did that make any sense at all? I think I lost someone. Okay. Covenants. Someone's asking about covenants. That's just a fancy word for the terms and conditions of a contract. Now, when a company borrows money, issues bonds, the lender, the bond buyers, and the company, the lender, the bond issuer, will have a contract drawn up. That's called the indenture agreement. All of those parts of that agreement are the covenants. Who's borrowing? Who is lending? What's the interest rate? How many years? Who is overseeing the bond, the lender's interests on the board of directors? What happens if this happens or that happens? Where does the company send its bond, its coupon payments? All of those are the covenants of the bond, indenture agreement. Now, the term covenants is actually just, it's any contract. Contracts are more or less a collection of covenants that constitute the loan agreement or whatever contract it is. So in our case, the covenants are merely for a bond indenture agreement, the who's, the how muches, the what interest rates, and all of those many details that will make it so that the lenders will be willing to lend money to the borrower. That's what the covenants are. So actually, if you've ever bought a car, you fill out, you sign papers. That was the indenture agreement. One of those documents was, some of them are state required documents, but the covenants were all those things that you saw in that you probably, like me, don't read it all. Those are the covenants. When you rent an apartment, that you sign a document that's got all these paragraphs, those are the covenants. Okay, fill or kill, number 106 on the list. Okay, you are my broker. And I am going to buy stock. Let's say that I decide I want to buy Microsoft. I can say, hi, buy MSF, one round lot MSFT. Well, they just buy it, whatever the price was. But I could say, I want you to buy MSFT at 120 or better, fill or kill. In that case, they would go into the they would go out and they would try to buy 100 shares at $420 or lower. If they can't, then immediately the order is killed. Right there. You could also say good for the day or good till canceled. Those are other ways. But if you just say fill or kill, that means they try, and if they don't succeed on their first pass, then your order is canceled right there. So that's a fill or kill. And like I said, there are other ones you could do, like good for the day. In other words, if you can get filled by the end of the day, great. Otherwise, once the bell dings, it's canceled. Or you can even say good for 3 days or something like that. So, but fill or kill means you try. If you can't right now, then walk away from it. Forget it. Now, you might be thinking to yourself, well, when would I do that? Suppose that I'm thinking that Microsoft is going to have a little dip for a few minutes, and then it's going to go through the roof. Okay, I call and I say fill or kill. That means don't even try it if you can't do it the first time, because otherwise we're just going to sit here and waste our time. You got it? Good. Thank you. Okay. Internally and externally generated equity. Fancy names. Okay, internally generated equity is what the company makes in revenue that ends up in the retained earnings. In other words, I sold $1,000 worth of stuff. I paid all these bills, paid my taxes, and there's $10 left over. Well, that's mine. That's internally generated equity. I earned that. Now, externally generated equity is if I went out and I sold some stock to someone. Well, they become owners, equity, but I generated their funds, that capital, from external sources. So in other words, a company ideally lives off its internally generated equity. And the only time it would go out to externally generate equity is if it has some ginormous project and it needs to raise a bunch of money, it could sell stock to do it. Okay? Bourse. That's a European word for an exchange. So the New York Stock Exchange and the Zurich Bourse, or the Berlin Bourse, or something like that, or the Paris Bourse, those would be European versions of our exchanges. It's just a difference in the term that you use. And you look more international if you call them what they are instead of saying, they'll know what you mean if you say an exchange, but they use the term bourse in other countries. Well, I'm going to go over the topics, and that'll be on Wednesday. Just you should know these. The list gives you the specifics, but I'll go through more of a topical list as one of those first things after all the other stuff. On Wednesday, you should know how to calculate the yield and the price of a bond. You should be able to know. You should be able to calculate a payment on a loan and calculate the effective yield on the loan. You should be able to use the capital asset pricing model to calculate the expected return to a stock or to a portfolio. You should know the difference between accounting costs and economic finance costs. I'll go through a little bit broader list briefly on Wednesday. Let me go on here. That's about where it is. What else you got? God. I look like a Yeti. Anyway, what else? That's as late as it's been today. Chat. Wait, got a couple more. Oh. Well, the final exam is mandatory. That Excel thing is completely, that's just one of the things you do in the course. That's just one, like your Cengage homework. It's just one of the requirements that you have to meet. It's 5% of the score. One thing I do want to, I can't remember if I already said this. On the Excel crash course, you go through, you do that. If you get an 80%, Wall Street Prep has a final that where they test your comprehension, your ability to handle Excel. And on that little exam of theirs, if you get an 80% or above on that, you get certified. You get a certification. It shows up on your LinkedIn. You can use it in your resume as, and you got a certificate number and all that. So 80%. Now, if you get that certificate, 80% or better. What I give you is 100% for that 5% of the course. The Excel crash course is 5% of the course. So if you get a cert anything from an 80 up to 100, you get 100 out of 100 points from me. If you get below the 80, you don't get a cert, you don't get certified, but whatever points you did get on that Excel crash course final, you get I put those in your book for that 5% of the assignment, 5% assignment. So if you got a 70, you wouldn't get certified, but you still get 70 out of 100 for the Excel assignment in that part of the of the course, for the Excel crash course part of the course. So that keeps it from being a wholesale disaster if you can't reach the 80%. Almost everyone is so far, and there's, I have to go through, and every 2 days, and probably it'll have to be every day from now on, I go in and collect up the scores in Wall Street Prep for my dashboard there and take them over and put them into that 5% assignment in the course. Now, one thing that I wanted to point out, and I think it, there's a typo or a wrong thing in the syllabus. As far as your in-class quizzes go, I drop your lowest three. I think it says in the syllabus I dropped the lowest two, but it's I dropped the lowest three of your in-class quizzes. Unless you want me to drop only two, let me know here in the chat if that's what you prefer. Okay, anyway, enough of that.
Three is good. Three is perfect.
You think so? Okay. I'm a little surprised by you saying that, but okay. Just please. Okay, now 10K, 10Q, 8K. Now the K's and Q's. Every 3 months, every quarter, every public company, and that is hundreds of thousands, must file a document with the SEC. It has parts, it has the quarterly financial statements for that quarter. It has all this other information for that quarter. At the end of every fiscal year of a company, they have to bring all of the Qs, the 10 Qs together in a comprehensive annual filing. That's a monster document. I've shown it to you in class. I mean, it's just like everything that's happened in the company all year long. That document that they file with the SEC is called the 10K. So the Qs are the quarterlies, quarterly financials and quarterly results and all that. The Ks are the annuals, the ones that are the whole year previous. Now, the 8K is a different animal. The 8K is a filing that has to be made whenever there is a non-recurring event, something that's unusual. Like if the CEO is fired, the company would be required to file an 8K with the SEC, which would then be available for everyone in the world to see. If a company had some kind of acquisition of another company, there'd be a lot of filings, but one of them would be an 8K that would say the agreement to acquire this company has been completed. Even if a company puts out a press release that's in any way material, it has to file an 8K. This is one of the things when I was a consultant, I'd have these small public corporations, they'd put out these.
I think you're muted right now.
Professor Finn, you're muted right now.
Said something in a statement that is material. So the 8K is a filing, disclosure of a non-recurring event, something important that has happened to the company that is in the interest of the world, the investment community of the world, to know about. So that's the 8K. The frontier of efficient investments is that arc that I drew on the board showing that no matter what stock you buy or what portfolio you hold, there is a boundary. There will never be a stock or a portfolio that is above a certain risk to return level. In other words, on the horizontal axis is the standard deviation, total risk. On the vertical axis is the return. We find that there is no place where you can find a stock that has too high. I has more than a certain return for the standard deviation, the risk of it. No matter where you look on the where you look, that place where you don't find any stocks or portfolios above it is called the frontier of efficient investments. No portfolio is above it. In fact, the only portfolios that would be even theoretically on that frontier would be world portfolios, where you held everything in one balance or another. Okay, diversifiable risk is non-systematic risk. If it's diversifiable, it's not in the system, it's non-systematic. If it's non-diversifiable, in other words, I can't get rid of it. It is systematic. It is in the system. The example I give, and I think I did one like this. You have a pimple on your nose. Well, that is not inside of you. It's on the outside. We can get rid of it. It is non-systematic. We can diversify away from it. We can cut it off you. But if you have a nodule in your liver, well, that's more a part of your system. That's not something we can just make it go away. In other words, diversifiable risk, you just buy a bunch of stocks and that risk cancels the stocks' individual ups and downs. Their peculiar risks cancel each other out. It's the same thing with a choir when people are singing together. One person will have a lot of weird sounds and odd things. But if you put a bunch of people together, they cancel out each other's accidents, and you have the underlying system of it. So non-diversifiable risk, this risk you can't get rid of, is the system. Diversifiable risk is the risk that isn't in the system. you can make it go away if you just buy more stocks that cancel each other out as far as their peculiarities go. So in other words, you have stocks like Microsoft. It actually has a lot of standard deviation of returns. But when you put it into a well-diversified portfolio, it kind of quiets down a lot. And it's like a pussycat. It's very much like people. Left to their own devices, people aren't all that predictable. They go kind of crazy sometimes. But when you put people together, then their behaviors are much more the system kind of thing. That's the best way I could do it. So, for example, Tesla, which is insanely volatile, but unfortunately, it's still pretty rough even when it's put with other stocks. Now, remember that beta measures systematic risk, not the total risk. So if I look at a beta, I have to know that, okay, that's a safe stock. Well, yeah, but that's telling us that it is a very safe stock in a well-diversified portfolio, because that's not measuring all of its ups and downs. It's measuring, beta measures just the ups and downs it would have once all of its weird stuff, its peculiar stuff, its standalone risk was quieted down. What else have we got? Oh, mother's work is never done. Go ahead.
When you were talking about the accounting profit and the economic profit, were you just saying in how it was recorded, like in dollars or percentages, or does that mean something else?
It means something else completely. You see, accounting profit says how much revenue did you put on your books, and how much costs do you have receipts for? You take the difference and you get your profit. In finance, we say you can't do that because, I mean, I can make $1,000 at a show. That's accounting revenue. But if I said $400 of that people can pay over time, I really took in only $600. And as far as at costs go, in accounting, they look at receipts, what has happened in dollars and cents. In finance, which is a branch of economics, we say those are historical costs. That's the first thing. And the second thing is you don't look at opportunity cost. It's like the guy I knew many years ago, he built a television from a kit. It cost him only at the time about $300 for this ginormous TV back in that, that was a different era. But, and he was bragging, he kept a log of how many.
You muted yourself again.
Professor Kring, you're muted.
What we in finance have to talk about. Accounting profit doesn't tell us anything. And take replacement cost. Well, you can look at the book value of, this machine, we paid $2,000 for it. There it is, right there on the balance sheet, $2,000. How much would it cost if you had to replace that machine right now? It wouldn't be that. It would be more than that. So we have to talk about things like replacement cost, opportunity cost, all these indirect costs, and most importantly, future expected costs. We don't live in history. We live in what's going to happen next. And the value of the corporation isn't what it has already done. It's what it's going to do next. Wait. OBV, unbalanced volume. I showed you these stock screens a bunch of times, and I said, well, look down here. Volume today was, on this stock, was 5,200,000 shares. And the 52-week average was 5,500,000 shares. So it's had a little less volume today than it did overall on an average day over the last year. That is, that volume is on balance volume. The stock buys and sells, that stock's buys and sells on the books, on the open interest balance sheet of the all the brokers in the country. However, there are many stock transactions and more all the time that are going through what we call the dark markets. They are not on any broker's sheet. So in other words, the on-balance volume on the balance open books of all the brokers added together was 5.2 million. But there could have been another couple of million that happened of buys and sells that happened in the dark markets. We don't see those. There are ways that we can find out what they are, but that number you see on that those screens that I show you, that's OBV. That is not including what's happening in the back channels. Okay. Now, risk pooling. This is the diversification. You'll see risk pooling is in insurance. If I insure one person, healthcare costs can go up insanely, down, up, down. However, if I start putting a bunch of people together, then when one person is sick, the other is well, and all of that, and the more people I put together, the more they cancel out each individual's whipsaws. And so what eventually I get is if I put enough people together, I get an underlying cost of the system of how much does the population that I'm insuring cost, not what in any individual. So that's risk pooling. It's obviously in insurance. One place you see it, and I think I mentioned this, is that small cities and towns will get together and they will create their own risk pool so that they cover, if any town has a loss, then they all help cover. So that means that there is this risk pooling going on so that when one town has a problem, the other towns are fine. Then another town has a problem the next year, but the other towns are fine. So in other words, they're canceling out each other's individual risks and creating an overall pool that represents the risk of the group instead of the risk of an individual city within the group. That's risk pooling. It's the whole basis of insurance, and it's the whole basis of stock purchases. It's, and in some ways, it's the whole basis of an economy where we have people do different things, and so the risks in one area are balanced out by the risks in another area. And in some ways, this is something that's a big problem in universities, which are now focusing more and more on these high-powered business degrees and engineering and science degrees. And yeah, well, that's where the money is. That's where the jobs are. And they are killing off fine arts and social sciences and history and all anthropology and all that, They're killing themselves with their obsession with focusing the risk pool. They're cutting down on the diversification. You follow that? Okay. Getting close to it. Let's see what we got. Oh, goodness. Okay. The piano man is apparently started up again. So I'm going to call this one now. And what we'll do is we will pick this up together again on Wednesday. But again, I have my office hours tomorrow. So come on by if you want to, or send me email message if you have a quick question or two. But other than that, I greatly appreciate everything you've done to put up with this little glitch in at the most inopportune time. But that's all I have for you today. I greatly thank you for your time being with me. Be gone.